Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money. Because whether or not we like it, money matters. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French. Last week, I received an ebook from financial planning company BDO, and it's called A Collective Guide to Wealth Wellness. And by the way, there is a link attached so you can read it yourself. And there was a great section on advice for graduates, but not only what to do with your first paycheck, but it included advice on the challenge of being a first-born graduate. And I think this is an important nuance in South Africa, and I've invited the author, Akona Modi, who is a financial planner at BDO, onto the podcast. So welcome, Akona.
Thanks, Maya, for having me. To such a great opportunity to really unpack this sort of complex issue around, being the first graduate, and the sort of financial responsibility that comes with it. But most importantly, the psychological, long-term impact, of being the first or maybe second graduate, within a family, to carry the burden of having to support your family and also, maintaining your lifestyle as well, where you are based, whether it be in Joburg, Durban, wherever you are as well.
I think we're going to definitely unpack that, because I think that's really, for me, what the article kind of really was about. But I wanted to, before we get into that, ask you, because something else in the whole document, the collective of articles, they spoke about financial well-being. And I thought that was quite a good positioning point to start with, and actually understanding what is financial well-being, because I think we all know that money in and of itself actually doesn't make us happy. As much as we think it will, it doesn't. So what is financial well-being?
Great question. I mean, financial well-being, and I'll sort of borrow a statement from Ricardo Teixeira, who's, our chief operating officer, is really having the confidence to live, your life today, live your best life today, but also plan for tomorrow, right? So if you were, what flows from that is then, the question that flows from that statement is, what is your best life, What is your best life? Now, you can answer that in many ways, but it boils down to, what is your purpose? What do you value? Do you value the most as well, right? So if you are able to answer that question, then you can build your money around your value, around your principles, around your purpose, So that's really the crux of financial well-being. And perhaps, I mean, even use an example, Mike Tyson is a well-known boxer, right? In his prime, he was one of the wealthiest boxers. But he stated in one of the interviews that he was not the most happiest person, although he had the wealth, but he was not the most happiest person, right? So money in itself does not necessarily buy happiness or financial well-being, right? So when you get to understand yourself, who you are, the core of who you are, your values, then comes happiness. Yeah.
It's about what you want from life. Yes. And a lot of it is about relationships as well, and your family relationships, your social relationships. Correct. And connecting into that, coming back now to the firstborn graduate, who now gets money for the first time, right? You're getting the salary, you've worked for it, you're now employed, but it's not that simple. And there's a lot of emotional stuff that goes with it. So let's get into that a little bit as well.
Definitely, it's not that simple. Maybe I can sort of use myself as an example, because I'm quite sort of connected to the story. I've written the article not because, I just want to, sort of a superficial article around financial planning. It has to speak, to the emotional side of financial planning. And, for me, this is what I've experienced. So hence I felt so sort of comfortable and confident to write about that, right? So I was first graduate, in my family to have sort of moved and got a nice job, man, nice graduate trainee job that paid at that time, like, I think 23,000, And I think my mistake was then to share that with my mother. I just said, look here, like from zero to like 23,000, man, So then it creates an expectation, what life would then look like, right? So got the job, got my first pay. And I mean, the African culture, they say, your first pay it goes to your parents, that kind of thing, But not necessarily, 20% went to my mom. But then that was just the start of it. Because now the expectation has already been there, right? So they expect X amount of money. But also as a person, as a graduate, I've seen, what my family went through in supporting me to get me to a point where I'm educated, to the point where I was afforded the opportunity to get this job, right? So also I feel so the emotional burden or emotional obligation to support my family, because I know the realities, you know, because I lived with them, you know? Mm. Even before I moved to Joburg, I lived with them. I knew, you know, month in, you know, it's very tough. So you then start doing that. There's nothing wrong with that, right? But over time, you're supporting your family, but not only that, you're starting a life as well, mm. wherever you are, right? Then it becomes complex. Then it becomes complex. You're sort of, you know, remitting funds to home. You're supporting your lifestyle here as well. And remember, your lifestyle has changed. Now, all of a sudden, you're renting, right? All of a sudden, you're not shopping at, you know, these sort of low-quality stores. You're shopping somewhere, you know. So the entire lifestyle has changed. You have to maintain that particular lifestyle, but also support your family as well, right? Then what happens is that the cash flow becomes squeezed if you are unable to manage expectation of your family members. Now, to add to that, the family, even the extended family members now that, hey, our corner is a financial planner. He works for one of these sort of institutions. Now, so these ad hoc requests comes in, you know. Hey, I'm struggling here, there. Can you help here? There? So it becomes really, really, really sort of burdensome for some people. And now what is important is to manage that effectively, right? Is to manage that effectively and in a very sort of amicable way. You know, you start with your parents. Tell them and have an honest conversation with them that, look here, this is what I can afford per month. Because now I'm having this lifestyle, I'm starting to save, I'm starting to invest, I'm building my own financial, you know, well-being as well. This is what I can do. And once they understand that, then you address the ad hoc request. You learn to say no. Very important to say no. You don't have to say yes, you know, to all these sort of requests from, you know, uncle, long distant uncle, aunts, things like that. So once you have that mechanism in place, it becomes easier as well. Mm. But if you fall into the trap of trying to please everyone, there's sort of huge damaging psychological impacts. I mean, we can discuss that as well, you know, the psychological impacts of you know, being trapped in that sort of cycle as well, you know. And it can have a long, long-term effect, and it can damage your relationship with money.
I remember, you know, I was speaking to an actuary. He was actually an actuary at, I think, at Old Mutual, and he was, again, mm. firstborn graduate. And what they had done, you see, there were a couple of them from the same area that had made it and got into university and graduated. And they actually created a fund for their community, but it was specifically for education. So it was to deal with these ad hoc requests, because I think education is probably the one that you feel like, if I can bring the next person up and the next person up, then I can make a bigger difference than just these sort of ad hoc requests. So they created a fund, an education fund, that helped with because obviously you've got NAFSAS, which pays, you know, mm. which will help with education, but it's those, you know, the deposits, the book fees, there's often additional expenses for that child to go to university that the family don't have. And they actually created a fund around that. And I thought that those are some of the things that one can do, because those ad hoc requests sometimes are really legitimate. There could be a child that you could get through education. So how do you find ways to... Yeah, to pay it forward as well. So it's a very, very difficult. And I want to ask your question about black tax, because I think that's a very negative. It's seen as a tax, as perhaps, I don't know, how what is your feeling about that use of that word? Those two words, should I say?
Yeah. I mean, it has this sort of negative connotation to it. You know, it's sort of black. You know, that's one word, black, and you have the tax. You know, anyone who pays taxes is not happy to pay tax. It's almost one of those things you just have to do by law, you know. So I would like to flip that around, you know, and maybe call it responsibility, you know, not black tax, but it's responsibility, because I mean, it's a community that sort of, and especially in the black community, it's a community that had sort of a collective effort to propel you to where you are, right? So then you have the responsibility to pay that forward. Mm. But how you do that becomes very tricky as well. Yeah. So the black tax, you know, wording is not, I'm not a sort of a proponent for it. We can maybe find a much more appealing term to it, you know?
Well, maybe it also becomes, you feel about it as a black tax if it's you answering all those ad hoc requests. So maybe that's the problem. Right. You've got to say, if that's how it's feeling to me, then maybe the way I'm dealing with it is, you know, if I see it more as I'm, you know, responsibility as a family member, this is my responsibility and these are my limits to my responsibility. Maybe you will feel differently about it and call it, you know, family responsibility, something
correct.
Like that.
Correct.
And I wanted to ask you, I don't know, you did say that you've sort of seen the UCT Liberty Institute research that was done on the black middle class. You remember they did the black diamond one, I think it was 20, oh, it was about 10, at least 10 years ago, that the black middle, black diamond it was called. And they went back and they it was the most fascinating research I've seen in a long time. And what was interesting for me, and that's again where this whole firstborn thing came up, is they spoke about the black middle class as being defined almost into two. One is where you are now second generation middle class versus first generation middle class. And the responsibilities, but also your reaction to money. So if you are from poverty, from relative poverty, into suddenly having access, right? And remember credit, because remember your salary may have been 20,000 Rand, but I'm sure they gave you a credit card, store cards, all the rest. You could have blown 50 grand pretty quickly. How do you think you respond, especially moving into the middle class and wanting, you know, the trappings of the middle class quickly and the impact of that, particularly if you are, you know, first generation?
Correct. I mean, it's one of the things which is quite fascinating, even for me. I can take it back. I mean, you know, guys who were the first to go out, you know, from where I come from to these big cities. You know, within a year, they'll come back driving a nice, you know, car, entry level car, nice car. And that became, you know, the sort of expectation that whoever then, you know, graduates, then gets a job. It's expected by your, firstly, by your family to, you know, you must come back, you know, at least within a 2 or 3 years driving a car. That's one of the first trappings, right? The second trapping is that you have to all of a sudden start changing brands. If you're wearing a certain brand of clothes, now you have to start, you know, changing to show that you're part of that middle class, you know? So those are sort of, one can easily overlook such trappings, but they have long-term sort of financial impact. You know, could spend 5 to 10 years, right? But what's important is to, in all that, is understanding yourself, who you are, right? And not conform to such pressures, right? So what is important in that instance is what they call locus of control, internal locus of control. What can you control? Identify those things that you can control and manage those things within the context of your own financial situation. Because you can't compare yourself to the next person, the other person, although you grew up in the same community, you went to the same varsity, but the realities may be slightly different. Mm-hmm. So it's really looking internally, understanding yourself, who you are, your purpose, managing your cash flow. You know, the other thing is to manage your cash flow accordingly. Mm-hmm.
And financial wellness, it comes back to financial well-being, you know, is massive car debt that's keeping you awake at night really financial well-being? I must just share with you a story. I had a woman was telling me, you know, she got into a bit of financial difficulty and she sold her BMW. And it's always a BMW. And she traded in for a little car and she went back to see her parents. You know that her mother said to, "You are embarrassing us. Don't come here with this car." I was quite horrified. I always thought, like, parents are responsible people who'd say, "Darling, I think you're doing the right thing. You're investing in your future. You're not taking on unnecessary." You're an embarrassment. That is what she said. So one has to be honest about the pressure that you feel when, you know, you go back home.
You have to. I mean, I can make an example. You know, for example, in my situation, you go back home. My mother tells me about, you know, this cousin who was an engineer, for example. You know, they'll tell stories. Hey, Lutola bought, you know, a nice car, you know, and did this and that. The next year, Lutola bought his father a car. So indirectly, the pressure's on you to say, hey, what are you doing with your life? What do you do with your money, you know? And those are the pressures, you know, they may be subtle, but they do have an impact. They do have an impact on how, you know, you make financial decisions, especially if you don't have a strong, you know, internal locus of control. You know, you tend to fall for these sort of trappings. You know, you have to stand your ground and really, you know, focus on yourself rather than external pressures.
And I wonder... Sorry, I was just wondering, do you think it's a useful conversation? And I'm asking just, you know, your experience to actually sit down with your personal budget, with your family, and saying, this is actually what it costs me to live. I have to pay 5,000 for rent. I pay this for groceries. I have to pay this for that. I can't. Where am I going to buy this car or pay all these things? Where do you think this comes in? Or if I buy the car, so you've got a choice, family. I can drive another BMW, but then you don't get any money.
Yeah.
Or you know, is it worth having those conversations? Do you think those are family are prepared to have those conversations?
No, whether or not they're prepared, but it's necessary for you to have those discussions. You can't wait for them to be prepared because they're not living your life. They have this sort of idea of let's say my life, and they build the expectation around that. For me, is then to take sit down with them, have an honest conversation, and really expose myself to them. Sometimes we also want as individuals to maintain this sort of facade, so it's one of those sort of balance and scale. You have to then sit down with your parents, expose yourself to say it's not all well, these are the challenges that I'm facing, these are my plans A, B, C, D, and this is what I can afford, this is what I cannot afford. So going forward, I'll give you X amount, and if the situation improves, then I'll sort of review this. For example, in my case, I had the conversation with my mom when I had my first child. I said, no, look here, now I have a child. It changes the game completely. So I will no longer be able to give you X amount of money, per month. This is what I can afford. And they took it well, and they understood. And I told her, you have to manage also your own finances. I give you money, you spend it on a very expensive, piece of clothing, you have to manage, so it's that conversation, it goes both ways.
Putting your family on a budget, that's been something very powerful. So, you know, I do Money Makeover with City Press, and we take six people through Money Boot Camp every year. And one of the things we've done a lot with is getting the fam so that people say, right, if you want money, could you please give me your budget? Where, what are you spending it on? And that, you know, they don't like that, but you say, well, I'm not giving it to you until I understand what it's being spent on. And that's creating discipline in the family as well. And I've actually got a friend of mine who also she said, simply says to her family, I will not. So she gives a certain amount every month to her parents, but she said, any unexpected requests, you have to give me advanced warning. I need a few months to build it into my budget. And they pushed back initially, but now they've learned. They have, so it forces them to plan because I think a lot of this problem is a lack of planning and a lack of budgeting by the family members. So very, very important. You can actually also just teach family to budget. If you've learned how to budget, then your family, you can pass it on to the family and say, right, everyone, we're going to do a budgeting session today and I need your budgets, otherwise you get no money from me.
Exactly, precisely, because all that sort of unexpected request, they're always urgent. I need it now. I need it now. I need it now. And so it can't be always, it's urgent, it's something that popped up out of the blue, really. So no, you have to manage those things, and educate your family, your parents or family members, educate them, around how to make informed financial decisions.
I was just saying one more thing about Money Makeover that I've also noticed, and you were talking about having the honest conversations, is that when they eventually do, when they sit with the family and say, listen, this is the situation, because now they go in the newspaper, by the way. There are big pictures of them in the newspaper saying, I'm in financial difficulty, I'm getting help. So it almost gives them permission to go to the family and say, this is a situation. And the relief, the sense of relief that they all have about being honest, also even being honest with their spouse, because some of them are not always honest with their spouse about the situation. So actually, it is one of the most liberating experiences is honesty. And it's not so easy to do, but very liberating. I want to get on to just some key kind of, because you're also in the article, I really enjoyed your kind of key points, actionable points that a graduate, and this is whether you're a firstborn graduate or any graduate, you'll benefit from. And of course, it starts with goals and objectives, which is what we've just been speaking about a little bit, I think. So, yeah, how do you approach your, you've got the first paycheck, you now got the money. How do you start about going about it?
So one of the sort of starting point is to sit down, devise or develop goals and objectives, right? So then what you then do, you connect your outflow, your monthly outflow or your budgeting to those goals. That's very important. Then once you connect, then you have a sense of where the money is flowing to. But if you don't know your goals, if you don't have objectives, then the money is just flowing anywhere and everywhere, right? So the key thing to have goals, object, it could be short term, medium term, long term goals. then you connect your monthly cash flow outflows to those goals. Then at least you have a sense of control as well in terms of your monthly budget and outflows. And what's important, you can hold yourself accountable. You have to, budgeting, and I think it's not an easy exercise because you expose yourself to yourself. That's the other thing. And you, all of a sudden, you see your true state of financial affairs, the true state of, and it's not easy to swallow that. And it can be discouraging to see the true state of your financial affairs.
Then it really can.
And the next month, you suddenly don't do it. You stop doing it because it's emotional, it's that emotional scar. You know that you're in trouble. So you have to be accountable. Have courage, first of all, to expose yourself to yourself. Connect the dots. Where is your outflow going and why? The why is the goals and objectives. And hold yourself accountable and be honest and have courage, and review whether quarterly or monthly review, hold yourself accountable. And it's a long-term, it's not a once-off. And people think budgeting is a once-off. It's a lifestyle. It's a long-term, it's almost like building an emergency fund. You don't build an emergency fund over a 6-month period or over a year. It can take a really long time to get where you ideally want to be. So it's a process. Understand the process. You may be discouraged, but continue the process. It's a journey. And that's key. Yeah?
Sorry. I also enjoyed one of the comments in the booklet was, for young people, you must save for retirement. It doesn't make them get excited. And it said, instead of talking about investing for retirement, let's use the phrase investing for my net worth. And I think that's a very powerful way of looking at your money. Are you growing net worth? And maybe, net worth is the difference often between your liabilities and your assets, or what you're saving and investing versus the debt. If you start to look at it through that lens, it'll be easier for you to turn down the credit cards and the car finance, because those are definitely not building or investing your net worth.
Precisely. And I mean, retirement for a young man like this, it's really, there's a disconnect. Psychologically, you can't connect to yourself in 10 years' time, let alone in 5 years' time, So really you have to change, the framing, which is very important, change the framing, what's the optimal state, financial state that you want to be, and how do you get there? And that's the question. Whether you do it via retirement, other vehicles, but what state you want to be. Retirement could be 40 years now, retirement has changed over especially for younger people. I don't see people, planning to work until 65, 70. They want to be in control over their future, right? Yeah. Start businesses with this and that, side hustle, and this sort of quiet quitting as well, people starting side hustle, gig economy as well, So it's all about, exactly that. How do you build wealth?
And I think you want to do the side hustle and all those things because you really enjoy them, not because you have no money, because you didn't save. That's also part of it. People are saying, I don't have to worry about retirement because I'll just keep working. You're going to reach a point in your life where you don't enjoy your work, or you're tired, or all of those things. And then you've been basically forced to work for a paycheck, and that's not going to make, So I think you're really mistreating your future self, I think, if you don't start thinking about these things. I also like the fact that you said you should allocate a portion of your salary to entertainment, because I think that's very real. And how much? I know everyone's going to say, how much should I be spending on entertainment? I know that's going to be the first question.
I know it's a trick question. And to me, it's very important to have a sense of enjoyment. And that's one of the purpose, of life, have a sense of enjoyment. But don't over-enjoy yourself. So that's where your question is sort of alluding to that. At least, in my experience, 10% of your nets, if you earn a salary, what gets paid to your bank account, 10% of that should be sufficient, for you to be able to enjoy yourself. Do the things that you like to do, during weekends. You can go for movies or whatever, go play golf, and also you don't feel trapped as well. You don't feel trapped. You get to enjoy yourself. So that's very important.
So I must tell you, in my budget, I actually have money that I put aside every single month for holidays. And I actually put it into a little savings account linked to my bank account called Holiday/Fund. Because I love my holidays, and now when I want to go on holiday, I don't want to think, oh, I can't go on holiday, or I've got to pull out my credit card, because of course I won't do that anymore. And I say anymore because we've all been there. I've learned my
Exactly.
lesson. So yeah, so I think that is for me building in that part and knowing that that's going to my holiday actually is quite empowering for me. And also you talk, of course, about an emergency fund. And like, how do you approach that? Because you're not going to have it in your first month. And but that emergency fund
No.
for me is like probably like 101, the most important part.
No. And I guess an emergency fund, it's one of the sort of foundation that avoids you over utilizing credit card or a credit facility. If you have an emergency fund, at least you have reserves to cover the unexpected costs, for example, right? So it's really the foundation of personal finance. But one has to understand it takes discipline and time to build an emergency. So how long would one typically take to build half of your salary, yearly salary? It takes time. It's not easy. You have other, responsibilities, things like that. But what's required? Discipline, discipline, discipline. Once you've built up something, don't use it. Don't use it because I mean, if you have something, there's always that sort of nagging voice that, hey, I need this. But it's not actually a need, it's a want, it's a desire, So you have to be disciplined, and it's a long-term process.
Yeah, and I always say to people as well, that to start try and get to 15,000 rand, because I think there's a lot of those bills, a lot of the day-to-day emergency stuff tends to be about that amount. I mean, obviously, if the big emergency or the big thing is losing a job, that's your 3 months of expenses, and it takes a long time to get there, but at least have some kind of liquidity to just to meet those kind of unexpected bills. But I must tell you, I also you were saying about how do you not touch it. And I was actually speaking to someone the other day, and he said to me, I built up this emergency fund, but I keep thinking all the things I could spend it on. So I put it into a 32-day notice account. And I thought that was good. You know, use products to protect yourself, go lock it
Definitely.
away so that if you need it as an emergency, you can always break the notice period if you really have to. But even in most cases, you could probably give notice if it'd still be enough time to handle the emergency if it's a bill or something. So I think that was just that was a good tip, because I think that's what most people do. They
No,
think they don't.
definitely. I mean, it's behavior. It's if you have something that you want to use it, then everything you see, hey, I need this, I need that, I need, but it's not actually a need. All of a sudden you want to
Sure.
renovate, you want to paint here, you want to do this. It's just discipline, really, and accountability is key. Accountability,
Yeah,
hold
absolutely.
yourself to account.
It's all about discipline. All of this actually, I mean, they obviously financial strain, and there's a lot of financial strain. So I'm not underestimating financial strain, but there also is an element of discipline. And that discipline is also simply tracking what you spend, just writing it all down. And we see it
Correct.
all the time with money makeover. The minute people start writing down what they spend, they start to see where the gaps are. It's like, oh goodness, I
Definitely.
didn't know I'd spent that much. I think one candidate 1 year had spent 2,000 rand a month at KFC breakfast. She didn't know. She did not know until she started tracking. It happens. Like you talk about entertainment. That was like, I don't think she realized how much I was going to KFC breakfast. So I think that is in that discipline of just tracking your money from, if you can do that as a graduate from the first paycheck, my goodness, you'll set yourself up really well for life. But I want to say thank you
Definitely.
so much. And I want to definitely, you and I are going to have to get on a podcast again soon, because I think we got a lot to still talk about. But if there was one kind of key takeaway that you'd like, if there was a young firstborn graduate listening, what's the kind of one piece of advice you'd like to leave?
So one piece of advice, don't succumb to pressure. I've seen that, and that's the biggest mistake that young professionals in general, make, is to succumb to this sort of pressures from society. Then you start, getting involved, in uninformed financial decisions, and it traps you. It traps you. I have a mate of mine who sort of recently bought a car, and it was an accident, and 40% balloon payment, the insurance didn't pay, and he's stuck. He's stuck, paying something that's not there as well, and he even planned to purchase a secondhand car. I said, Chief, no, don't do that. Because you're already squeezing what a thin sort of cash flow position. So don't succumb to social pressures. That's it. Because once you have that, even if as you build wealth, you join different people in society, you then don't succumb to those pressures. That and it's a
I think,
psychological, element to it.
okay, we needed to get a little bumper sticker for cars saying either something like I own this car, not the bank, or something like my real money is invested, or something like
Exactly.
that.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
it's a helpful
So,
thing.
yeah, that's one piece of advice, and it's not sort of a financial advice, but it's life in general. It's just advice in general. Don't fall into, social pressures.
Exactly.
Really, that's the key.
Super. Well, thanks so much. And I really, really enjoyed your article. And yeah, we'll definitely have to chat again soon. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I mean, maybe next time we can have, further discussion on this. I'm interested in the psychology of it, the psychological impact of it. And I don't think, it's sort of studied enough, what's the psychological impact in a long term of people in such situation. I mean,
Absolutely.
you can start developing, this thing called scarcity mentality,
Yeah.
which is bad. It's bad, So yeah.
Absolutely. I think that we'll maybe get some feedback from some of our listeners and their reactions, and we can include that as well. Fantastic.
Definitely,
Thank
yeah.
you.
Thanks. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thanks.